Broadcasting from Dublin, Ireland, and around the world on TalkingBrawlsMMA.com and iTunes. You're listening to Ireland's premier mixed martial arts show.
This is Mike Dolce.
Ian McCall. James Little Evil Pulver.
The Crippler Chris Leaving.
Is your eye favorite?
Johnny Hendricks. Frank the Legend Shamrock.
Buffer, your voice of the UFC Octagon. And now, we are live at Talking Brawls.
Talking Brawls MMA.com podcast is live back in your ears after a crazy night of fights in Las Vegas, Nevada last night. Conor McGregor coming up short and losing against Nick Diaz in that welterweight bout. And
Nate Diaz,
should I say. My apologies, Andreas. Well in there. And Holly Holm losing her world title to Misha Tate. Crazy night of fights, and we're going to have a little chat about the fights that went down last night. And my good friend from across the pond in the UK, it is Andreas and Giorgio. Mr. Andreas, what's been happening, man? Pretty crazy night of fucking fights, wasn't it?
Firstly, now, great to be on the Talking Brawls MMA live show, post-UFC 196, and Jesus Christ, what a fucking night. I mean, I don't know whether I want to laugh or cry right now, but... with Conor losing and Misha Tate upsetting the odds against Holly Holm as well, it definitely was a very surreal night of action at the MGM Grand Garden Arena in Las Vegas.
The one thing that really stood out to me, you know, when both guys got into the cage was the size difference once they were standing face-to-face in the octagon. It was evident right from the get-go. Obviously, Conor had a pretty decent first round, probably won the first round for me. How did you score that first round, looking back at it now?
Yeah, I definitely gave Conor the first round, no doubt, 10-9. He was landing really, really well with that looping left hook that we've seen him do so many times. And maybe on a smaller guy, he may have, visibly hurt them more. We know that Nate got the cut, but there's a lot of scar tissue there. I know there's a lot of people maybe looking a bit too much into that. But the amount of scar tissue that Nate Diaz has over his eyebrows, I mean, it's not going to really take much for it to bust open. But Conor was definitely leading in that first round, in my opinion. Head movement was fantastic. Really, really good with his shots. He even landed those uppercuts that you mentioned as well. Yeah, he was doing really good. And Nate looked hurt. Nate looked a bit shocked with how Conor was approaching it. But I feel that he just got tired out.
What do we look at the reaction as well, you know, the crowd. It was really, really eerie. We mentioned that, just touch on it off air. There was like an overcoming, it was a foreboding silence, so to speak, in the MGM. It was a really surreal feeling on the night. A lot of people say, you know, it's been detrimental to the UFC. It's been a devastating night for the UFC. Is it really devastating? I don't really feel it is. You know, I think it's obviously a bad night for business, but Conor still has that insurance policy on that 145-pound title. Surely that's where we're going to see him next, right?
Yeah, man. I mean, 145, in my opinion, is probably, you know, more than likely where we're going to see Conor McGregor next, defending that championship he won against Jose Aldo. Maybe potentially against Jose Aldo in a rematch. We know Aldo, of course, piped up a little bit on Facebook after the fight. Frankie Edgar is another possibility. But just kind of picking up what you said about the MGM, I mean, I knew a couple of people there, and definitely that was echoed about the kind of eerie atmosphere in Las Vegas, because of course, why wouldn't it be? You know, so many fans traveling over there to support Conor McGregor. It's very similar to Ronda. When you sell a hype train like Conor McGregor, no one believes he's going to lose. And when it actually happens, you know, like it did against Nate Diaz last night, you kind of think, "Fuck, you know, what just happened?"
Yeah, it was one of those ones, man. I was watching it here, and I rang my good pal, who's actually sitting right here beside us, Endo Conor, and yeah, he was pretty shocked as well. Endo, what were your thoughts on the fight as a fan looking on and really sort of was it a devastating night for the Irish fans of mixed martial arts? Just interested to get your opinion. Enda's a bit shy here. I don't think he wants to get involved on the show. He's gone a little bit red there.
I'd agree with what he says, though. Yeah. Definitely a steep learning curve because, as I said, I think the Irish fans genuinely thought Conor McGregor was indestructible.
Yeah.
And I would have liked to feel that as well, because especially with the amount of money he's generating and the amount of eyes he's bringing to the UFC and to the MMA product, of course you'd want him to continue to keep rolling with the scene.
But it's not, you get that feeling, you know, of invincibility, and now that's gone. how detrimental is it to his brand? That's the question that's really going to be asked. Now, we'll only probably learn that at UFC 200. I think he was very humble in the post-fight press conference as well. He came across excellently, humble in victory, humble in defeat, and all that. How much does this damage the brand of Mr. McGregor?
For guys like me and you, Niall, who have followed Conor before the UFC, yeah, so when he was at Cage Warriors, I don't think it affects us that much because we've seen exactly what's happened. Bushinger and Joe Duffy as well, both similarly getting submission wins over Conor McGregor. And of course, there's going to be a lot of UFC fans who don't really know that much about Conor's previous history before he went to the UFC. And, you know, his ground game's always been in question. I don't think it was too much of a question mark last night. I just feel that he gassed out. And he, rather than being knocked out on the feet, he took it to the ground to take a submission loss. That's just my personal opinion on it.
Yeah, and you know, it's a pretty crazy. And what did you make of Conor's comments afterwards as well? You know, he was asked, is he going to go back to 45? And you know, I thought, you know, I think, and I've said this for a while, you know, I think Frankie Edgar is the fight that has to happen ahead of the Jose Aldo fight. We saw Jose obviously being knocked out in 13 seconds. We saw his tweet as well last night, which I thought was a bit shitty. You know, sort of out of place, out of time. Didn't come across too well. You know, we look at the fight now that's going to probably happen at UFC 200 against Frankie. Is Frankie the fight? Should it be the fight?
I mean, yes. Very humble from Conor last night, post-fight. And that's what I would have expected from Conor, because although we get that smack talk all the time, with Conor McGregor, he's always been very, you know, honest and open with his opinions and with his beliefs. And I feel we got that post-fight where he just openly admitted he was inefficient against Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz was the more efficient of the two.
How bad was the performance? You know, we said the first round was good. But if we look at the second round, you know, I think it was once he got rock bomb shot from Nate, you could see his legs go. And that was the beginning of the end for me. You know, I was gone here. This fight's going to come to an abrupt end soon, because once he took that shot, his legs really looked like a jelly. He just was that the weight as well? As can we take that in consideration?
Well, I mean, the jab from Nate was fantastic, because that's what really opened up all the shots for him. And as you mentioned there, Conor did stumble, and that's when the floodgates really did open for Diaz to come in with his shots. But you know, the weight, of course, you're going from 145 to expectedly 155, to then going to 170, I can guarantee you, I can pull any nutritionist, any dietitian, any doctor of that knowledge into the room right now, and will tell you that you can't just go and fucking do that and expect to, you know, the next, you know, your next fight, you're going up whatever 20 pounds.
It's unheard of, man.
You're
gonna
be fine the same.
It's unheard of to go 45 to 70. Look back now, it's obviously not the greatest decision in the world. Like, you know, what was fascinated what Nate said. Nate goes, I'm the 145-pound champion now, which I thought was pretty cheeky and cool. It's a victory for him as well. We can't forget Nate and all this. A guy, I think he's got 500 Gs for the fight last night. Massively smashed what what's the most he's probably earned a night? $90,000 in a night, including a bonus. Great night.
I thought he was around 40 and 40, you know,
I think he was 20-20 for was he 20-20 for his fight against Johnson? He walked out with 40. It's a great night for him as well, Andres. We can't forget Nate and all this. Obviously, you know, the talking point is, oh, Conor's lost from a standpoint over here in Ireland in the UK. But a great, great night for him. And the needle mover is well and truly there, so to speak.
Well, it was funny, because how long now has the Diaz brothers been telling us they're the needle movers? The UFC been selling wolf tickets. And, you know, it'll be really interesting to see the further statistics that come out about the pay-per-view in the coming days and weeks. That'll definitely be interesting.
Dana said it was smashing all kinds of records last night. Will we beat UFC 200 or 100?
Nah.
No, I don't think so. I think it could. I think it could. Holly's a big draw. Misha's a big draw as well. They've got a big fan base, you know.
And well, what did 100 brothers. Do? Was it 1.4 or 1.7? Which one?
Was it 1.4, I think.
Okay, so let's say it did 1.4. Okay, the last fight, Aldo, did 1.1, 1.2. And don't forget, that's about a year's build-up for that fight. For this, a fight on 11 days, although generating all kinds of media and press, I don't see how it can do that. I feel they'd be really lucky and they'd be really happy with breaking that 1 million mark.
are we going to get the media hype again for a Conor McGregor fight after this loss? Is it going to take a few fights to build it back up? That's going to be the interesting thing.
Nah, not one chance. Conor McGregor will remain relevant for as long as he's fighting. Right. No matter who he goes up against, no matter where he fights, what division. Conor McGregor, you want to watch a Conor McGregor fight because you know you're going to get your money's worth. And that's what I love about Conor McGregor. And I think that's what the fans love about this occasion. Yes, Conor lost. But, you know, the thought's still in the back of the head. This is his first time at 170. What happens if he fights Nate at 155? What happens if these two meet again at 170 down the line once Conor's maybe readjusted to the weight a bit more, you know, stopped fighting at featherweight altogether, had a full camp to prepare at the weight? The interesting factors are definitely there. And I think people still want to see Conor McGregor. There's no question about that.
Yeah, you have to look at Chael Sonnen as well. And, you know, someone mentioned this last night at some point that, you know, Chael was a guy that talked great smack, you know, one of the best talkers of all time. But Chael has had numerous amount of losses on his card. And, you know, he still bounced back and still got that pay-per-view draw and media and fan support behind him. So that's the way I think we have to look at Conor. We look at the great Chuck Liddell and the likes as well. You know, eventually they all lost.
Well, yeah, here's the thing that I want to really draw the parallel with, because I don't feel that enough people are doing so. There's too much talk about Conor McGregor being the UFC MMA's Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah.
No, stop. Whoever's saying that, take a seat, put you know, a movie on and chill and shut the hell up. Because seriously, that's one of the most stupid comparisons you can ever make. As a big fan of boxing, Floyd Mayweather, in whatever sport you want to look at, NFL, the NBA, UFC, will never ever be replicated, because a man to go undefeated his entire career at the level that he has done is untouchable. But however, a comparison I will take is that Conor McGregor is a modern-day incarnation of Muhammad Ali. Because, here's this, Muhammad Ali, of course,
it's a big statement, but he's an absolutely
fantastic heavyweight boxer, without a doubt, one of the greatest of all time. Muhammad Ali, never, ever, ever, you never looked at him and said, this guy is completely untouchable. Of course, the era of invincibility was always seen with Muhammad Ali, but he lost fights, and that never detracted from him. He was still a massive pay-per-view star, still the biggest thing boxing had ever had to that point. And he lost a fight, and people wouldn't go, well, I'm never watching Muhammad Ali again. More people will come back because they want to see the comeback story. They want to see the man defy the odds and come back and win the championship again. And I think the same is going to be said with Conor McGregor.
Is that the flaw in Conor's game now? We saw, obviously, Nate comes forward. He's a guy who likes to, you know, high volume and high pressure. You know, Frankie probably isn't the best in matchups. I've said it, you know, all along the line, I believe Frankie's going to be obviously a very tough, tough challenge for Conor McGregor. You know, do you foresee problems in that fight for Conor?
I mean, I think for Conor, going back to 45, where his natural weight class, I guess we can call it. I mean, with Frankie, we know you're going to get a very, very tough wrestler who will be very relentless. He will not let up. He will keep coming and coming and coming, exactly like Nate Diaz did last night. And if Conor is not switched on, then he's going to struggle again. The issue with Conor is, if Conor cannot keep that space between him and his opponent, land a counter strike, sit on the back foot, do what he wants to do, he's not going to have much success. We saw it a little bit in the Chad Mendes fight, where Chad came forward and Conor was struggling a little bit. And Nate Diaz executed it perfectly last night. For Conor to beat Frankie, he's got to go in there, and he's got to make sure that he can keep the distance with Frank Edgar, similarly to how Misha did with Holly Holm last night as well.
We look at Conor's jiu-jitsu. You know, a lot of people were complaining about giving out about it was very soft submission, and Nate basically got it in too easy. Area of improvement for Conor?
The ground game?
Yeah.
I mean, look, I don't want to be, you know, very kind of controversial with what I want to say about Conor's ground game, but if you look at what happened when he took Diaz down, and it was a last ditch survival effort for him to take Nate Diaz down. As soon as that fight went to the ground, as soon as they were rolling, if you saw how easily Nate Diaz was rolling him about and doing what he wanted to do, Conor was flopping about, surely you have to look at that and think that his jiu-jitsu definitely needs work. And I don't mean as in, you know, we know SBG is a very good camp for jiu-jitsu in general, but I feel that Conor has never really transitioned it properly into how to use it effectively in MMA.
Yeah. I want to get back to Nate again, Andreas. What is next for Nate? That's going to be the fascinating thing I think we're going to see in the next coming months and weeks. Are the UFC finally going to give him his dues and push him? We mentioned, yes, I was speaking on the radio yesterday, you know, potentially and possibly the reason why the Diaz brothers haven't got the push from the UFC that they've, you know, they've deserved is because they, you know, they don't turn up for media obligations. They're very unreliable and flaky along those lines. Are we going to see Nate Diaz really push forward, pumped into the limelight after this win?
I mean, Dana White post-fight said, who knows if we'll ever see Nate Diaz again. He could ride up in his yacht tomorrow and we won't see him again. But
it's definitely
fascinating. Yeah, no, it's hilarious and it's fascinating as well for the future with Nate Diaz. I think for Nate, he could effectively stay at 170 and maybe challenge Robbie Lawler. But I'd like to see him, you know, stay at 155 where he, you know, he's just beaten a guy who was supposed to be fighting at lightweight and go up against RDA and maybe avenge that loss. But the only issue with that is we've got to wait and see how long it's going to take for RDA to rehab his broken foot.
Is that it? Do you think the UFC are going to go along those lines and give him a title shot? I'm not so sure. I think he might have to fight maybe one more time before he gets a lightweight title shot. I know he's coming off that win against Johnson, but you have Khabib Nurmagomedov coming up and Tony Ferguson as well, which is a huge, huge fight in that lightweight division.
Yeah, but when's that fight scheduled for, Khabib and Tony Ferguson?
April, as far as
I
know.
So it's in April. Let's say it's in April. Okay, and they want to do something in July. Is that, would you say that's realistically enough time, especially if they have a war, for them to turn around?
RDA's, I think, is going to be out, 5 weeks altogether? I think that was the general consensus of
so.
Of the
so would you rather do RDA versus the winner of Khabib and Tony ahead of Nate?
Yeah, I do. What I think, you know, you look at Tony Ferguson, if he wins this fight, I think, what is it, 9?
Fight, yeah,
you know, that for me, that's a title shot. Has to be a title shot. April, well, May, June, July. That's a 3 month turnaround for Khabib or Tony. So,
what do we do with Nate there in the meantime? Who do we match him with?
That's the interesting thing. Yeah, you know, who do you match him with? That's what I'm trying to establish here. Do we go along the lines of Showtime's fighting soon? Is Showtime have a fight announced?
Yeah, Pettis fighting. I can't remember who against who, but he. Pretty sure
I'll
fight
hang on
now.
Hang on a second. I'll get the rankings up here and we'll have a little look and we can have a little chat about that, because I think that's really interesting. What is going to happen with Nate next? As you said, he could fucking well sail away in his yacht in Stockton, which, you know, wouldn't be surprising. You know, you never know with the Diaz brothers, but we look, you know, he's beaten Michael Johnson. He's up at number 5 now in the rankings. Pettis does have a fight against. I can't remember who it's against, but that would be a decent scrap, eh?
Against Anthony Pettis, yeah, especially if they both elect to stand and trade. But I don't know. I've not really.
Anyone listening in, tweet us in who's Pettis fighting.
There's too many fights. Pettis fighting. But you know what? I want to say about. By the way, I just found out. I just googled it. Error on our behalf, but Anthony Pettis is expected to face Edson Barboza at UFC 197.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, geez, that's a bloody mouth-watering tie right there.
Yeah, it's a bloody bath, you know, is, you'll tell you that. There's going to be a lot of blood in that fight.
They may well do Nate and Rafael. You know, Nate's predominantly been on Fox cards, as you mentioned last night. Why are they putting me on Fox cards? Yeah, but surely now it's going to be pay-per-view after that performance.
Yeah, I think now, once you get the Conor McGregor rub, it's a bit hard to go back to doing Fight Pass or Fox Sports 1. You know, for me, Conor will never ever, in my opinion, ever do anything other than pay-per-view for the rest of his career now.
Yeah.
Because he's that kind of fight. And the UFC, fuck it, if they're paying him $10 million, they can't afford to do it otherwise.
It's north of $10 million.
Say again?
It's north of $10 million.
That's what north he said. Of $10 million, as he would say on, I think it was CNBC, that which was hilarious.
They could do with a cowboy fight again as well for Nate. That's one that sells, you know, he beat Cowboy. It probably doesn't make much sense for him, but Cowboy doesn't have a fight.
I know, but I 100% agree with you, but do you not feel that now Nate holds so many options in his hand? He's kind of in the McGregor position.
Well,
he can literally say, I'll do whatever the fuck I want to do.
He can call out whoever the fuck he wants. And it's going to be the interesting one. Maybe they might do the Rafael fight, but they're not going to do it. Will they do it in Fox? Surely he's gone to, as I mentioned just there, they're not going to do that on Fox.
Yeah, I doubt they'd do that on Fox. But then again, is RDA really a big seller? That's what we were saying before he fell out of this fight. Yeah, McGregor was promoting it, but
it's all hypothetical. It's all hypothetical. But this card, hands down, I believe with Nate Diaz on it has done better numbers than it would have with Rafael Dos Anjos on the card.
No, I'd agree. But again, hindsight's 20/20, so we can't really tell that.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what happens with them. Nate Diaz. Lived up to the hype last night, ladies and gentlemen. It was pretty impressive. You know, I want to talk as well. Obviously, we had another very big fight. We'll go back and forth with Conor Nate. But Misha Tate, what a performance from Misha against Holly Holm. I had Holly obviously leading the fight going into that round, but fantastic stuff from Misha. She looked really dangerous on the ground. She'd Holly in trouble. What round was that she'd in trouble the first time? Was it the first round or second round? Second round, yeah, it was the second round. She had her in deep, deep waters there. Fair play to Holly for riding that one out, but she couldn't ride it out in that final round, and she ultimately tapped on Misha. What a performance from Misha. We have to take our hats off. You know, a lot of people didn't think she was going to get the job done, including myself last night, but fantastic stuff. And, you know, one of the pioneers, as we mentioned on the show during the week, our regular podcast, Andreas, of women's mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
Great to see her finally get that UFC gold, and it spiced up things again in the women's bantamweight division. I mean, we desperately needed that. I think it was getting to the point when Ronda Rousey was just killing everyone until Holly Holm came along and beat her. It was dead wood, exactly. Yeah. So it's fantastic stuff for Misha, but first, not Brian Caraway. We don't like Brian. Don't get carried away.
Did you see his red boxer brief night for Brian Caraway last night? Look, dude. But look, I'll say this. I'll happily sit here and instead of eating humble pie, I'll eat humble cupcakes because
I'm sure. I bet you would.
But look, we were talking in the middle of the week on the Talking Brawl show, Niall, and we were both kind of saying, how the hell does Misha Tate win this fight? And Misha Tate went out there and expertly executed probably one of the best game plans anyone has ever put together against a champion, against a Holly Holm. She did fantastic. Did like the space between her and Holly Holm. She made sure that there was enough there that Holly can't just lead on with a jab, throw that big leg kick, but enough that she could shoot and Holly didn't have necessarily enough time to react to it, which she did twice in round two, where the judges gave her a 10-8, which I don't know if it was necessarily a 10-8 round.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, in the final round where she got that rear naked choke.
Fantastic stuff from Misha. That's another fascinating thing. What are the UFC going to do from here? Is it Ronda for Misha next? Are we going to see another match between the two of those ladies, part three? It's going to be fascinating to see what they do. They have a lot of options there. Amanda Nunes obviously winning as well last night. She gave a few words towards the new champion, telling her she wants her. Let's do it. Let's throw down. It probably is going to be Ronda Rousey, though. You'd have to imagine.
Well, I don't like the fact that it's probably going to be Ronda Rousey. Because after everything that's happened, all the media shitstorm after Ronda Rousey lost to Holly Holm at 193, Ronda being on the verge of she had suicidal thoughts, the way that she's kind of taken to the media on the Ellen.
And I remember we mentioned that as well. She did some show recently on her PR team. Obviously, Ronda has her own PR team that go around with her. They were told not to mention anything about fighting, which, how can you do an interview with Ronda Rousey and not mention anything about fighting or her returning to the octagon?
Well, I agree, but Ronda Rousey last night wasn't even watching the UFC. She was at a PWG wrestling show.
Is she done with martial arts? Should we really be asking that question?
Apparently Dana texted her and told her, and she says that she's going to get back into training right now. She wants to fight against Misha.
I think it's pretty mad, her behavior in the last number of months. And
I know she's a big pay-per-view draw, and I know she's a major asset to the UFC, but the way she has treated martial arts and the UFC after her loss, how can you say this girl deserves to be next in line? Misha Tate, it's an underdog story. The Strikeforce bantamweight champion, after all these years, comes and finally wins the UFC bantamweight title. What an amazing story. Yeah. Against... And now what? Holly Holm definitely didn't, you could say she definitely deserves a rematch. She put everything on.
She's winning the fight.
Why are we going to give it to Ronda? Especially when you got, as you said, Nunes out there, Kat Zingano, the options are there. And I just...
Has Kat got a fight announced? Kat has seemed to be...
Kat hasn't got a fight announced, but apparently that she's saying that something should be expected to be either announced soon or to be... made in place too.
She's retiring because it's been so long since she's fought. Obviously,
yeah. I actually miss Ngannou, man. I think she's a tremendous fighter.
Yeah, she's a tremendous. Obviously, we can go back and talk about that fight against Ronda where she rushed out. Really, very surprising for me, that fight where she rushed out and just completely went against her game plan. She did exactly what Ronda did against Holly. She rushed into things, over panicked, over elaborated. But she, she's a tough test for anyone, and obviously she's beaten Misha before. That's another fight we could make. You could throw her into the lines then and make that fight again because she's beaten Misha Tate.
The only issue is with all these fights that we'd love to see, for us to see them all, Misha has to defend that championship. You know what I mean? And I think if they put her to Ronda Rousey next, then honestly, I just, as you say, Styles.
We can go about that all day. Are they, you know, if they're going to put her to her, but are they going to put her to her? You know,
for me, it probably will happen.
Yeah,
I saw the smirk on his face. Yeah. They want to do it. That's what they went with. Dana, for so long, he wanted Misha to freaking retire. B, he was like, well, maybe we should have really waited for Ronda to come back. Holly, he was kind of actually, I think it was with either Megan O'Leary or Fox Sports 1, he was kind of criticizing Holly Holm's management team for deciding to take the fight against Misha, knowing that stylistically it was a very, very difficult fight. So the president of the company, who is taking pot shots at you because he wants to see Ronda Rousey back, what do you do? It's effectively now, I'm so happy for Misha, but lose-lose. It's a lose-lose situation.
I'd like to see Misha, you know. I think the Amanda Nunes fight might be the one to do. You know, maybe sort of build one or two more contenders with Juliana Peña. I know Juliana's not going to fight Misha because they're good buddies. But that's something the UFC could do as well. They could ride it out a little bit and establish more contenders, get Katsangano back in there, have a list, one, two, or three. Obviously, if Ronda was to get that title shot straight away, you know, people would call for the Holly Holm fight then, and you're circling between one and two fighters when you could be building contenders and actually making a line of decent fights for the world champion to defend.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. And with Nunes, I thought Nunes dealt very well with Shevchenko, last night. I thought that Valentina really kind of came out very flat in that fight. She didn't use her Muay Thai enough, and she definitely had the advantage there. And once it was going to the ground, Nunes is always going to absolutely dominate you there. So I thought it was a very tough fight for Shevchenko, and Nunes, you know, again, did very well. I do agree with you. I feel we should build up a couple of these other these other girls, because as we were saying before, Ronda got knocked out by Holly Holm,
she was the queen.
The division was flat. You were like, who the hell do you match her up with next?
Yeah, no, that's the fascinating thing. I think that's going to happen in the division is, you know, what the UFC are going to do next. It probably is going to be Ronda, but I think they should go along a different route. As I said, some other good, you know, I look at this fight card and I look back compared to last week, Andres. You know, from a betting point of view as well. I know myself and yourself had some very near misses last weekend on some big books. But if you look at this card, you couldn't have predicted anything really that went down. There was just upsets all over the place. We look at your man won a lot of money. Your man won a huge amount of money again. The guy that was on an MMA Junkie during the week, he had, what did he put, $50,000 in Holly Holm before Ronda Rousey's fight. And he backed Misha Tate. I think he had $20,000 on Misha Tate last night to win. So some very happy punters in Las Vegas last night. But a good card. Sorry, go ahead.
Except for me, man. I did very badly last night. As I was saying.
You texted me.
The first fight, I had a roaster in that first fight. And my accumulator was done from there. But I had some other accumulators on, and it just wasn't a good night, man. It felt like it was the night of the underdog.
Yeah, I got a text. I went for a pint before, during the fight pass prelims. And Andreas texted me, accumulator gone after the first fight. It was quite amusing. I put a smile on my face. But we look at the card as well as a whole. I want to touch on Diego Sanchez, Jim Miller. Surprised me that Diego Sanchez pulled that out of the bag. Great night for Diego Sanchez. You know, I thought if he was to lose that fight, he potentially might have retired and called it a day. Trouble for Jim Miller and his UFC future after that last night?
I mean, It's not the kind of loss where you'd say that he definitely deserves to be cut, because it wasn't exactly the most dominating performances from Diego Sanchez. But when you if you lose to Diego Sanchez, do you really deserve to be in the UFC? I mean, it's a tough one. I think Miller,
he's lost four of his last five.
Yeah, I know. And look, if this was the UFC maybe 5-6 years ago, I think Miller, you could have a case for him to stay. But I just don't think now that Miller is, you know, he can really, you know, hold his own in that division of emerging young guns.
He never really kicked on since that Benson Henderson loss. It's been a very much a mixed bag from Jimmy Miller since then. What sort of numbers do you think this pay-per-view card is going to do? Are we going to get it breaking the likes of what we mentioned there, UFC 100, no? Pot shot.
On pay-per-view or on Fox Sports?
Pay-per-view.
On pay-per-view, no. I think it, if they're happy, you know, if they're lucky, if everyone's happy, and woohoo, yeah, one million, over a million. I just don't see it. I don't see it breaking Conor Aldo, and B, I don't see it breaking UFC 100, which is 1.4. I don't know. Do you think it will?
I'm not so sure. Yeah, I think Nate and Conor really did pull A lot of imagination around the world, I think, especially here. You know, yesterday I was in town on a radio show here in Dublin, and literally everyone was talking about the fight. Everyone was wanting to know, all my friends, you know, where can I watch the fight tonight? I was getting those texts. It didn't have that UFC 189 feel about it, but people were asking the questions as well. Where can I watch the fight, Niall? You know, guys who wouldn't really normally tune in to mixed martial arts bouts unless Conor was fighting. You know, a couple of taxi drivers asked me the same question yesterday when we were talking about it. So it was quite an interesting one for me. I think it'll hit a million. Definitely, I do believe it'll hit a million. Maybe not along the lines of what we've seen from Conor, but I think it's going to be right up there. I think the gate record last night.
No, it's the second highest in Las Vegas, just under 194, third highest of all time behind 129.
Yeah. So, no, I wouldn't be surprised. I think it's going to do maybe 1.1. That would be my shotgun prediction on pay-per-view buys. But talking of pay-per-views, we have a huge one. Obviously, you know, people are going to look towards this as Conor's return to the Octagon after the last one. And that's UFC 200. What are we going to see at UFC 200? Are we going to see Conor Frankie? You know, are we going to see the return of Ronda against Miesha Tate? What sort of card do you think we should be looking ahead and forward to, obviously, in July?
Let me put my matchmaking crocs on.
Yes,
and,
do it.
I'll tell you. Okay, so I feel that Conor will be the main event of UFC 200 because why wouldn't you? He's still the biggest pay-per-view draw in the company without question. I feel that in the main event, you put him against Aldo. I just don't see him taking the Frankie Edgar fight. I really don't. I feel that you put the rematch with Aldo, you put to bed any lingering issues at 13 seconds. What happens if we see a full fight in the main event? So that's what I'd do with Conor. And then I think, I just feel in the UFC will probably put Ronda Rousey, Miesha Tate in the co-main event just because that's what's going to sell. I mean, they did that when they put that to co-main event under Anderson Silva and Chris Weidman. I think it did a very good buy rate of between 800 and 900,000, which for an Anderson Silva fight was tremendous because the only other guy to really get some good pay-per-view worth out of him was Chael Sonnen, as we've mentioned.
You love that word, by the way. You're like me, but obviously. You say tremendous a lot.
Dude, I have a lot of those words I say too many times. If I could hear telling? Myself, I'd stop.
I'm the same, dude. I'm the same. But no, you know, GSP, there's been a lot of talk about it, you know, and I've touched on it with a number of his teammates. Are we going to see him at UFC 200? No?
Well, it's funny because I asked Tom Breeze when I was in London, hey, man, if you could book any main event for UFC 200, what would you like to see? And Tom Breeze, in his typical joking...
Birmingham Breeze.
He said...
I think
he said Rory McDonald GSP, and I laughed and walked away awkwardly. And I don't think GSP's coming back. I think he's happy.
I mentioned the same thing to Tom as well. Tom was along the lines of saying he's coming back, and then I asked Joseph. Obviously, Joseph was obviously offering TriStar as well, and Joe said he wouldn't be surprised either. So, do you not think that's a little bit of an inkling into the fact that he might be coming back?
I just think that TriStar, everyone there has an open mind that because I do think that genuinely. GSP has always said, if the circumstances are right, I'll come back. I just don't think the circumstances are right at the minute.
Yeah, no, you could be right. But it's going to be fascinating to see what the UFC do at UFC 200. I think I'd like to see Conor Frankie. I think that fight has to happen. I think Frankie, you know, potentially, you know, he wanted the fight at 189, didn't get it against Conor. You know, he tore his groin coming into the lead up to this fight. I just think that fight has to happen. I really do.
Yeah.
For the sake of the featherweight division as well. If Conor's to go back down, I know Jeremy Botter has said again last night, tweeted saying Conor will never fight a featherweight. But you know, do we look at that as being a potential as well, possibility that Conor will not fight a featherweight and go to 55? He surely has to hang on to that title.
I think that now, because of losing to Nate, he doesn't walk into a title shot at 155. So he walks into maybe a mid-tier level fight at 155, and I don't think Conor wants to do that. I think that the whole aura around it was that he was going to be the first guy to hold the two belts at the same time, which was him walking into the RDA fight. I as much as Bot is saying it, I do expect him to go down to featherweight, because if you think about it, last night, that's all he was really talking about.
There is fights he can make at featherweight. Yeah, that's what he... the first thing he said, you know, I don't think Conor's going to want to give up his title. I've always said that. You know, there's been a lot of talk leading into this fight. He's never going to afford to fight at 45 again. I think it's definitely going to happen. But if you look at the potential fights to make, there actually is still some very big fights. We have, as we've mentioned there, Frankie Edgar, which, I, you know, for me, it's just a dead fucking cert that has to happen, that fight. You can forget about Aldo for the moment. But, you know, what I think they should do, you've a guy in Max Holloway as well, who's, you know, that rematch sells. That you know, Max has improved tenfold since that loss to Conor McGregor. A fight I would like to see would be, obviously, Conor Frankie, but another one, I've mentioned this to you before on a number of occasions, to sort of determine who is the next in line after Frankie or Conor. Jose Aldo versus Max Holloway.
Yeah.
Is that something that interests you? Do you know, will we see a little tournament set up to determine who will be next? I think it's going to be Frankie, but behind Frankie, for instance.
I like the matchup very much, and I agree. Max Holloway's improved tenfold since the Conor McGregor loss. Again, the only guy in the UFC to take him to a decision. I know Conor obviously tore his ACL, but it's still a massive credit to Holloway. I don't see Jose Aldo fighting anybody unless it has a title on the line, unless the featherweight.
But why should you deserve it? Why should you get an instant rematch after getting knocked out in 13 seconds? Not a lot of other fighters do.
He's a stubborn Brazilian, man. That's just how it is. He's not going to take a step back. Look at Tyron Woodley. How long has he been out? Because he's adamant he's next in line for the welterweight title.
I don't agree with it, but I'd love to see Jose Aldo trying against Max Holloway.
I do agree, man. I think it'd be a super fight. I just don't see it happening.
Where are they going to, you know... It's intriguing. If Conor does go to lightweight, he's not, as we mentioned, now going to walk into a title shot. But can you throw his name in the mix from the conversation we had earlier on about him being a top player? Is he going to have to fight someone like Tony Ferguson or Khabib Nurmagomedov before he would make a title reign, you know, get a title shot if he was to go into that lightweight division and relinquish the featherweight belt?
Well, if he was to walk into the lightweight division tomorrow, I'd place him anywhere between 6 and 10. So you could do a Dustin Poirier rematch. Donald Cerrone's there. Even Michael Johnson. I think there's a couple fights that you could definitely do there if he walked. But that's where I feel he'd be walking thereabouts into.
Someone tweeted that last night, actually, that said Cowboy versus Conor in July at UFC 200. Realistic possibility?
I mean, anything's a realistic possibility with Conor McGregor, the businessman. I'd love to see him against Cerrone, of course. That'd be a real, real, real fun fight to watch. I feel we're going to have to wait and see, but I just feel that the way he's talking about 145 last night, like, it's kind of like that's all he, at the minute, he has to cling on to. The fact that he's still the 145 champion. We're going to see him back there, and he's either going to fight Frankie or Jose. Hopefully Frankie, but you know what I mean? I think he has one more fight at featherweight, then he moves to lightweight. And maybe, depending on circumstances then, we'll, at the end of the year, see him fight for the lightweight championship.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic times ahead. You know, yeah, for the Irish fans, just to say a word, you know, no one's unbeatable. I think the only man in mixed martial arts that possibly is going to be unbeatable is John Jones. He's an absolute killer. Let's touch on that. That was fantastic. You know, I loved that before the weigh-ins on Friday, Trey. We got a lot of shit talk. We got a lot of banter. Of all the fighters that are going to square off. You know, that was great to see, I think, from the UFC. Every single pair of fighters that are matched up and that are fighting soon, they actually had like proper shit talk towards each other. Even Chris Weidman, we saw him, and you know, Chris normally isn't like that against Luke Rockhold. It was fantastic to see that, and there's real weight behind some of those fights that we're going to see, and real, you know, there's real panache amongst the fighters, and there's, you know, that shit talk, that element that we want to see and really promote the fights. It was great to see.
There's just so much bad blood there, you know. JJ Champion, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, Claudia Gadelha, apparently they got bust up at the Tough House, as Dana White was saying.
Sorry, a question on that. Are you annoyed that fight is on? It's going to be on. I think it's going to headline Fox on International Fight Week. That should be a pay-per-view fight ladies to promote it.
I agree it should be pay-per-view, but I feel that at this, where it is at the minute, the UFC is still building up the strawweight division. Joanna is only just breaking into the US market, in my opinion, after the, you know, being the co-main event on the Ronda card. I feel if they go on Fox, don't forget, you get more viewers watching Fox than you're going to have watching this pay-per-view, legally anyway. Mm. So her and Claudia headlining Fox during International Fight Week, the UFC going to pump a lot of into that. And I feel that right now that's where Joanna needs to be.
How much, and you know, we've talked about this as well, how much has Joanna improved since that first fight to Claudia? I actually had that fight scored for Claudia, 29-28. Yeah. I thought Claudia won the fight. Yep. Obviously, it was given to Joanna. Is Joanna a completely different fighter now than what she was then?
Joanna is literally... I don't think you can even look at her as the same fighter.
I think you have a little bit of a crush on Joanna, do you? You never stop talking about her.
I do. I absolutely love her. And I'll tell you when. When I was in Berlin, when she fought Jessica Penny.
She's a lovely.
And it was in the middle of a media scrum. And she's just looked so pissed off of all these questions. And I can't remember, but I asked something. This video is on the MMA Plus YouTube channel. You guys can check it out there.
There are probably some stupid questions.
I asked something, and a little smile just comes onto her face. And I was just like, she's so awesome. So I've got so much respect and admiration for Joanna.
I think it runs a bit deeper than that.
You're a real question.
But let's kick on. And I want to talk about John Jones and Daniel Cormier just before we get out of here in a few minutes' time. That man was, you know, I wasn't that surprised. You know, I wouldn't be as fond as Daniel Cormier as a lot of people. But holy shit, man, there's going to be some promotion leading into that rematch. I thought it was awesome. Everyone, you know, getting on John Jones' side and really sort of welcoming him back, and I was surprised at the reception John Jones got, but I wasn't too surprised at Daniel Cormier, the reception he got, and he got really angry and animated with the crowd as well. It was a bit strange to see.
Ever since Jones was stripped of the title, Cormier has slowly been playing the heel role, the villain role, expertly in the light heavyweight division. And because of so, I don't know. John Jones, yes, what an asshole with the cocaine stuff and the hit and run, all that shit. We can't overlook that. I'm sorry. Absolutely, the pound for pound best fight on the planet right now. I won't even disagree. Yeah. We can't overlook that shit. Bad stuff for the PR of MMA. But he's just an awesome fighter. And I think fans love the underdog story. Fans love a comeback story. And they don't like DC. So that really does help that they want to cheer for John Jones and see him reclaim the spot that he never lost.
Yeah, it's going to be a fantastic fight. Does it play out the same way that it did in the first fight? I thoroughly believe it will. John looks absolutely incredible at the moment. In prime, Nick, by all accounts, doing a lot of weight training leading into this rematch. It's only a matter of time, really, before John does go to heavyweight. I think there's two or three fights, possibly early 2016. I spoke with Mike Winklejohn a few weeks back, and Mike agreed with me. He said there's probably two fights after the Cormier fight. We've Rumble Johnson and maybe the Gus rematch. They're the only really two fights after Cormier. It would be for John Jones, or for John Jones after Cormier.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, though, because I feel that if Cormier loses, I feel Cormier goes.
Is it a matter of when Cormier loses, you know, going on the first fight? Because he was completely dominated.
Reality. Yeah, I feel it's a reality that John Jones is going to win the fight. And I feel when we were in London during the Q&A, Rockhold did say that dependent on the result of that fight, we may see him move up to light heavyweight, which would be interesting, of course, as well. Luke Rockhold in the light heavyweight division. But I just feel DC goes up. John Jones probably goes up soon. But yeah, Gustafsson and Anthony Johnson.
Will he go up, though? The fact Kane's challenging for the title? Well, it sort of remains to be seen whether Kane's going to be challenged for the title. Is that his thinking?
I think it's a bit of a mess at AKA in the minute. Yeah. I just think that they're, because of how they've got three top level guys in three divisions, one of the best things as a fighter is that you have options and you can drop up or move down or stay the same way. They don't really have that because you've got so many dominant guys. You've got Kane there in the heavyweight division, who we got to wait and see after what happens with Verdum and Stipe Miocic. Of course, you got Daniel Cormier, who most likely will be on the losing end against Sean Jones. And then you've got Luke Rockhold, who's got to face Chris Weidman again. And I just feel one thing that's always hindered them is that there's no options there. They just can't, at the minute, they've just got to kind of stay and wait and see what happens.
Bold statement from me. I think Stipe Miocic is going to be the champion pretty soon. I believe Stipe could very well win that fight. You know, I mentioned, I put a tweet out the other day. The first event I ever covered in a media capacity was UFC Nottingham, Struve versus Miocic. And the improvements we've seen from Stipe Miocic since that have been absolutely phenomenal. He hasn't lost since that. Well, he's lost one since that fight, and that was arguably. I had him winning that fight. Also, is that a realistic possibility that Stipe Miocic reigns supreme?
Yeah, I think definitely. Verdum, as much as he is a fantastic heavyweight, we cannot overlook that. I just feel Stipe has the kryptonite to dethrone him.
I agree.
He's just such an awkward guy. He's an awkward fighter. I wouldn't want to face him if I was a heavyweight.
He's so fast for a heavyweight as well. Yeah. People give him that credit. And, you know, I think we saw the game plan. What fight was it? The JDS fight, I believe it was. Where he used that pace. He got in and out really quick, really well. With his boxing, he's a lovely, lovely boxer. He's really, really good on his feet, Stipe Miocic, and he has that element of wrestling, which we only really saw against Mark Hunt. It was the first time he implemented really in his UFC career. I think he is the kryptonite to beat him as well. I definitely believe Stipe Miocic could be the man to watch out for in the heavyweight division. There's some fantastic fights coming up. We rock Hall Weidman as well. That was good to see that little bit of shit talk as well between the two of them, saying, "Oh, I'm finished with you guys, Weidman," to rock Hall and AKA and Daniel Cormier and things like that as well. That's a fight I wasn't so mad on seeing the rematch straight away, but it's going to happen. We know it's going to happen. Is there any different outcome in that fight?
Well, I'm really taking a look into Chris Weidman's mindset. Our good buddy Jonathan Schrager from MixedMartialArts.com.
I'm Jonathan Schrager here from MixedMartialArts.com. How are we doing?
Fantastic. It just felt like he was in the room. He just did an interview with Chris the other day. And I thought it was a real good insight into Chris Weidman's mind, because Chris doesn't like talking about the Rockhold loss. Yeah. It pisses him off. I mean, as a fighter, I feel you need to embrace your losses and take a look at that. And I don't know if Chris Weidman's done that.
Yeah, I don't think he's done it either, but I think it's another cracking fight to look forward to. Okay, Andreas, just before we get out of here, we've been on the air for 46 minutes. So just before we get out of here, just sum up your reaction from last night, and you know, is it as bad and as gloomy for the folk here in Ireland as some of the fans may feel?
Well, I'll give you a timeline of my emotions last night. So the UFC starts happy. Get a bit bored in the middle. Yeah. Oh, good fight. Nice. I'm happy. Laughing. Oh, wow. Super shocked. Misha Tate. And then laughing to crying again when Conor McGregor did lose. But this morning, I've completely changed my outlook on that. I'm looking forward to the future of the UFC in 2016. Conor McGregor's got so many awesome fights that he could potentially have. Nate Diaz, I don't know what the fuck he's going to do, but I really can't wait. Even if he rides a yacht into the MGM Grand, I'd love to see that. But whatever happens, and especially all the fights that we spoke about today, I'm definitely in a very reflective mood, but I'm excited to see where we go from here.
Definitely, yeah, I completely agree with you. I hollow those statements and sentiments. But yeah, I think people shouldn't get too down about it. You know, Conor will bounce back. I thought he was very impressive the way he handled himself in the loss last night. And, you know, Conor's going to be still a beast at featherweight. We know that. The size, obviously, was a bit of an issue in the end. We all thought it wasn't going to be an issue. Nate was a heavy underdog. But, you know, fair play to Nate. Got the job done. Delighted for Nate in other respects that he's won. I think, you know, it's going to push him on now, something that he's really deserved in his career. 21-fight UFC veteran. So, listen, for everyone listening in Ireland, it's not the end of the world, not by any stretch of the imagination. I know there was a lot of down, disappointed fans last night, but Conor will bounce back in that featherweight division. And as you said, we have some fucking awesome, epic fights to look forward to in that division when he stays around there. So, Andreas, just before we get out of here, because I've eaten nothing all day, man. I went to bed at 10 a.m. I watched the post-fight presser. I've eaten nothing all day. I'm fucking starving. So I'm going to go and get some chow now with my buddy here, Endo O'Connor. And how are you, man? You all right? Enjoy listening in there, yeah? Yeah, brilliant stuff. So I'm going to get out there. Where can the guys find all your stuff? Maybe you might jump on again with me next week on the podcast.
Yeah, man. Well, hopefully I'd love to be back on Talking Brawls. You can, of course, catch my work over on MMAplus.co.uk or on the War of the Words podcast.
Subscribe to that
show. My official podcast, which you can subscribe to on iTunes as well. Or you can follow me on Twitter at Andre M. Giorgio. Send me a GIF. Send me a funny picture and let's all laugh and cry together in the coming days.
Yeah, laugh and cry. Jesus fucking hell. You look at the big cheesy grin on this guy's face. He is a cheese ball. I like to call him feta. Okay, guys, as always, you can catch my work on TalkBrawlsMMA.com at Niall McGrath for You can subscribe to the podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, all that good shit. So from Andreas M. Giorgio and Niall McGrath, it is good luck and good night.